While Sarge yelled unhelpfully at the Marines, Tank pulled out his drone controller and announced that he'd started getting a faint signal through the jamming again. From what he could see, all the regular Psi suppressors were offline. The Wraithbone one had been disabled, so only the stasis field was left, keeping the Demonthrope in check. Feeling pretty sure he knew what his orders would be if he asked for them, the techie immediately started mashing the button to re-engage the Wraithbone suppressor. Through some sort of miracle, the signal made it through, and the psychic pressure of the Demonthrope's mind began to diminish. For about 10 seconds, that is. Then Spot 210 reported a flagrant system error, and a second psychic screech knocked all non-superhumans on the pad to their knees. Over by the Marines, Sarge and Doc hauled themselves back to their feet, practically begged the Asari's to do something. The two Death Watch Marines ignored them and started arguing again. Since our guards were preoccupied and it looked like the shit was about to hit the fan either way, the rest of us decided it'd be a good time to go collect all the weapons that had been left in the shuttle. Jim and the Adepts were left standing in the middle of the landing pad, viewing the situation with increasing alarm, and therefore were in the best position to observe what happened next. A third screech doubled everyone over again, followed by the sound of Fumble screaming for somebody to come help him, for they all go loose. Then the entire pad shook, and a geyser of fire and blackish green lightning shot out of the facility's roof. As we all pulled ourselves upright and followed the standard guard post-explosion procedure of asking everyone else if they were dead, the Heart Marine punched his way through the elevator's doors, began walking towards us, and then turned around as a pair of lightning reeds figures rose out of the flaming crater behind them.
The closer figure was a human-looking shape.
On the image, it's cool.
Yes, it's very... I think that's fan art of this exact instance happening, which is great. That's really cool. The closer figure was a human-looking shape, obscured by some sort of bluish energy bubble. Judging by the hat and coat it was wearing, plus the fact that the only other nearby psyker we knew of was currently screaming for help somewhere down below us, it was probably the Inquisitor. There was nothing indistinct about the second figure. It was the Demonthrope in all its horrible, unholy splendor. The 3-meter-tall snake-like bug still had Sarge's whole metal shield wrapped around its head, but its eyes blazed red through the metal in a pair of horns, as well as a far more demonic-looking maw had somehow formed on the surface of the half-slagged shield. The big change, though, was the wings. Inside the stasis field, they'd been sort of vestigial-looking, but now they stretched twice as wide as the Demonthrope was tall, and they looked a lot more solid than anything we'd ever seen. Before this, and when they'd been sported by the possessed Narlok and the Cogton, they'd been sort of indistinct and smoky. Now, they were more like clouds of ink bound into a tentacle-like tendril texture, and green static crackled through and around them like the field of a poorly maintained power weapon. All in all, it was the most demonic-looking thing we had ever seen. And mind you, that list includes a lot of demons. As the two of them rose out of the crater in the facility's roof, the lightning arcing between the Demonthrope and the Inquisitor's shield steadily intensified. Just as it occurred to us that we should probably do something to help, the Inquisitor's shield disappeared with a little pop. The man hung there for a second, looking surprised, and then let out a horrified scream as the electricity reappeared all along his body. His back began to arc, arching, bending, and then crackling. There was a final shrill scream and a horrible, gooey crunching sound, and a basketball-sized sphere, slightly cooked gore and overly dramatic clothing splatted to the ground.
Jim... and two out of the three Adepts screamed. Amy snickered, and Tink and Twitch simultaneously yelled, "Told you so!" at no one in particular. Sarge facepalmed, and Doc looked up at the apothecary. The medical marine let out a wary sigh as the Inquisitor's hat drifted down to the rest of us on top of his compressed corpse, and muttered something about needing yet another new Inquisitor. Nubby, his voice returning, pointed out the big demonic bug things over and over there, which was entertaining itself by tearing a hole in the fabric of reality, and asked the Marines what they were going to do about it. Grumpy and Heart Marine both let out battle cries and charged forward. The apothecary shook his head and followed them at a more sedate pace. With a little mutter about them having fun with that, Nubby started to sidle towards the shuttle, only to be yanked in the air by Sarge, who was already bellowing orders and demands for information at the rest of us. Jim reported the shuttle was still out of fuel, still had 20 AA guns pointed at it, and still had its long-range comm jammed. Tank checked his controller and said his drone was coming back online, and the Wraithbone suppressor might be salvageable if he went down to fiddle with it. Sarge digested this, and then declared that, since running away and calling for reinforcements weren't viable options, our only real choice was to kill the bug. The problem with this idea was that none of us had any desire to go toe-to-toe with something that could compress someone into paste with a glance. Luckily, there were three crazy bastards in power armor who would do that for us. All we needed to do was figure out a way to help the Marines without getting ourselves horribly killed in the process. A short debate was held, and by the time the Death Watch Marines had opened fire, a plan had been formed.
It was decided that Sarge and Amy would stay on the surface. They'd do their best to assist the Marines, probably by picking the small time of demonids that had started pouring out of the newly opened warp rifts that tried to avoid drawing too much of the Demonthrope's attention. Meanwhile, Tink would go retrieve his drone and the Wraithbone suppressor, then try to figure a way to weaponize it, while Nubby would do the same thing as Fumbles. Twitch would support them and lend his skills to the weaponizing thing, and Doc would go along and make sure nobody did anything stupid, which technically made him the man in charge. Doc was not thrilled with this assignment. Finally, Jim and the Adepts were told to go do something useful, like getting AA gun sorted out or unjamming the long-range comms, or finding some sort of holy artifact stored in a case marked "In case of demonic incursion, break glass." Anything that got out of the line of fire, really. They accepted their orders without complaint and scampered off after Doc's team towards the partially destroyed elevator into the base.
Those of us in Team Doc climbed through the hole that Hartman had punched through the elevator's doors. Inside, we discovered the reason for the Marines' violent exit. The elevator's car appeared to be stuck about halfway down the shaft, and all the lights and control panels were dark. There was a maintenance ladder on the far side of the shaft, which, judging by the massive hand and foot-shaped dents in its rungs, the Marine had just used to get back to the surface. We noticed that a few of the rungs had either broken or been ripped entirely out of the wall, but the Space Marine weighed a lot more than us, so we figured it was probably safe and began climbing down. Jim and the Adepts were a little more dubious, but they eventually gave up looking for their options and followed us. After Twitch popped a rung loose, which barely missed Doc, and dropped half a level, they decided that whatever they were going to do could probably be done in the first level, and hastily exited the shaft. We asked them to look into fixing the elevator while they were at it. The signal from Spot and the volume of Fumble's periodic incoherent psychic shouts peaked three levels below the stuck elevator, and we decided to exit the shaft. Tink suffered a minor heart attack when the first thing he saw about after prying open the doors was a pair of turrets aimed at his nose. Luckily, they didn't seem to register him as a threat, and the rest of us managed to catch the techie as he reflexively dodged backwards into the shaft. After a little debate over whether the turrets were just waiting for us to let our guard down, which ended with Nubby tossing a half-eaten ration bar at one of them to see if they'd return fire, we all climbed through the doors.
We found ourselves in a short hallway that ended with a second pair of turrets and an impressive-looking security door. Another debate was started over whether the turrets would actually try to attack us if we tried to plasma the door open. But Doc resolved the issue by checking the door's controls and discovering that it actually wasn't locked. In fact, none of the doors we ran into on the base were locked, and all of the turrets were just as immobile as the AA guns on the surface had been, which was both convenient and disconcerting as hell. I mean, we just delivered a demonically possessed Zoanthrope to the place. Who knew what sort of shit was penned up down here just waiting for a chance to escape? Well, actually, the recently squished Inquisitor had probably known, since judging by the ransacked appearance of the facility, he'd been spending the last week or so gathering up everything in the place as evidence of heretical experiments or whatever. He was a bit too busy being an asshole, also dead, to share that info with us, though. Anyway, none of us, not even Twitch, had time to spare worrying about what was in the base and why its security was offline, because we could hear and, more importantly, feel the battle going up back on the pad. We followed Spot's signal, rushing through the hallways and across recently stripped rooms without incident, till we finally reached a security door with a piece of paper that said "Evidence Storage" taped to it. We opened the door, which led to yet another turret-filled hallway, at the exact same instant as some sort of eight-legged, augmentic-covered lizard monster came through the far door. We looked at the lizard monster. It probably looked at us. Something in the room behind it exploded, and Nubby slammed our door back shut.
A bare second after the door slid closed, something slammed into it, leaving a large outward dent in metal. This was followed by the sound of four turrets beeping to life in a sort of general fracas as they and the lizard monster sorted out their differences. Nubby, his fingers still firmly held on the close button, suggested finding another way into the evidence room, or at least waiting to see if the turrets won. Doc, feeling like he should do something leadery, announced that there probably wasn't enough time, so we'd have to open up the door and deal with the thing. The rest of us agreed, but the question was how to do it was up for debate. After a short argument in which it was decided trying to flash and rush a creature that had a metal plate instead of eyes and could punch head-sized dents into security doors was stupid, we decided to go with our usual strategy, blowing the ugly thing up. There was a problem with this plan, though. It had been several weeks of combat since our last supply, and Twitch's stockpile of explosives was down to just his backup grenade and frag mine, plus the improvised explosive which Sarge had let him bring on the shuttle. Twitch asked for the rest of us to pony up whatever we had, but Tink and Doc didn't have anything except for a few flashes. Doc was given shit for not saving the syringe of face-melting biotoxin that had been recently extracted from Gravis, and at least until he was threatened to go get another one and make Tink carry it. Nubby, on the other hand, grinned an evil little grin when he was asked and reached into his perpetually filthy coat. On the surface, Brother Bellicus of the Black Templars noticed a large group of demonic hormigons moving to flank him, reached for his grenades, and swore when his hand closed on nothing.
At Twitch's mark, Nubby popped the door open just wide enough for a lumpy object, which consisted of a half dozen cross-wired lasgun power packs wrapped with tape and nails and two Astarte-sized frag grenades to be tossed through. A few seconds later, the doors reopened as far as the dent in it would allow, and we all squeezed into a hallway, which is a bit worse for wear, and smelled somewhat disturbingly like grilled grox. We all resisted the urge to see if the Xenos' remains tasted like it smelled, made our way to the far end of the hallway, and discovered that the door had locked itself when the turrets had activated. Since said turrets had been pounded to fucking scrap by the lizard thing, Tink just plasmaed the door locking mechanism and opened it to reveal a scene of pure mayhem. To start with, it wasn't an evidence room. It was an evidence warehouse. The place was absolutely massive and filled with stacks upon stacks upon stacks of Inquisitor Eye-stamped boxes, as well as a few hundred large metal cubes that we guessed were some sort of mobile prison cell. The stacks had probably been all neat and orderly up until a few minutes ago, but the explosion that had preceded the Demonthrope's escape had occurred just on the other side of the room's left wall. The crates and cells had been scattered across the room, many of them cracking open in the process. Servitors, terrified scribes, prisoners, and escaped Xenos specimens were running in every single direction. Several things had caught on fire, and in the center of the room there was the mother of all three-way melees. As far as we could tell, the teams were remnants of an ex-Inquisitor retinue, a group of servitors and prisoners led by something that looked like a human except with the size and musculature of an orc war boss, and what we guessed, based on all the extra limbs and such, was an entire gene-stealer cult. Nubby tried to close the door again, but he was stopped by Doc.
We stared at the carnage for a while, and then unanimously decided that we wanted nothing to do with any of it. Don't get me wrong, we were all brave, upstanding soldiers of the Astra Militarum, the many, the expendable, the guard, and all that. It's just that we had more pressing things to deal with, and we honestly just didn't really care about who was fighting who over what. In our professional opinion, they all looked like psychotic assholes, so we were perfectly fine with them killing each other to their heart's content, as long as they did not drag us into it. We began settling around the edge of the room towards the Demonthrope's crater, the sidle being the form of movement which best conveys, I am not part of this, please ignore me and go about your business, argument, murder. It took a little work to find our way through the scattered evidence boxes while simultaneously trying to keep as much cover as possible between us and the melee, but aside from the occasional stray shot whizzing by or still warm corpses lying in our path, we managed to avoid most of the locals. There were only three real interruptions in our progress. The first was when a terrified man we recognized as a scribe that accompanied the Inquisitor on the landing pad nearly ran into us. Twitch shot him on a reflex, and the rest of us refrained from commenting. The second interruption was a little more eventful. The giant man-thing in the middle of the room bellowed, a cell crashed into the wall ahead of us, and something tentacular began to worm its way out. Twitch shot this interruption on reflex too, but this time, we all joined in. After a few volleys, the tentacles retreated back into the cell. Twitch tossed his frag grenade in after them, and we continued on our way. The last interruption occurred as we neared the center, neared the crater entrance, and did not begin with Twitch shooting anyone, but that was only because Nubby grabbed his gun.
As we approached the edge of the crater, three indistinct forms, which looked like short cloaked figures, came around a pile of crates and practically walked into us. Nubby stopped Twitch and gestured at the rest of us to squeeze against the wall. We did as he said, and watched in surprise as he cheerfully waved at three figures, then directed them towards the exit. There was a greasy croaking sound and a whiff of something absolutely vile. Then the figures just vanished into thin air. That was a little disconcerting, but Nubby told the rest of us that it was fine. The cloaked whatsits were bendies. and they were wonderful people. For a horrible mutant, Xenos, at least. Apparently, they hung out in the sewers on some hive worlds and were a great way to get rid of things. You know, like prescribed substances that no one would buy, or pieces of equipment that you just happened to find lying around on the battlefield, but turned out to have belonged to the Commissar and now had your fingerprints all over them. Also bodies. Great for getting rid of bodies. Anyway, wonderful people, he said, aside from the smell. The rest of us eyed Nubby, which had never intentionally bathed or changed his underwear in his life and whose breath could tarnish ceramite, and decided not to comment. Shortly after that disturbing encounter, we reached the gaping hole that had been blasted in the room's wall. The room on the other side was a much smaller version of the evidence room, with a brand new Demon Thorpe installed skylight. We guessed that it had held 50 or so evidence boxes, one of those mobile cells, 8-ish inquisitorial minions, and now it was filled with parts. Anyway, the knee-deep gore was just backdrop. What really caught our eyes when we peered through the crater was the only thing intact in the room, the top half of our Demon Thorpe containment unit. Oh, and the half-naked woman who was crouched on top of it and singing.
After an initial second of shock, scantily clad women being just about the last thing we'd expected to find in an inquisitorial research facility, we realized that things were not as they seemed. It's hard to say what tipped us off exactly. It might have been the odd shape of her ears, or the unnatural harmonics of her singing, or maybe it was the words Eldar Subject Number 4 printed on the back of her tattered straitjacket. Regardless, our well-honed inquisitorial investigation abilities told us that while the creature prying at the containment unit was female, she was not a woman. She was also not an orc, no matter what Twitch said. So no shit. There we were, standing in the only entrance of a room containing a half-naked, unarmed Eldar of the female persuasion, who was apparently too focused on singing to the Demon Thorpe containment unit to even notice our arrival. The question of what to do in this sort of situation is something that bored guardsmen, or idle cogitator adepts, might spend endless amounts of time arguing over. Not us, though. We were above that sort of thing. Yeah, okay, no, we weren't. I mean, aside from avoiding work and blowing things up, pointless arguments, especially sordid ones, were just about our favorite pastime. It was just that before we could get started, Tink noticed that a tendril of Wraithbone was sneaking out towards the singing Eldar from the containment unit. Before any of us could stop him, the techie stepped around the corner, raised his plasma gun, and told the Xenos to stop messing with his stuff and get her own damned Wraithbone. Nubby snickered, Doc groaned in exasperation, and Twitch pulled Tink out of the way of the bolt of lightning the Eldar flung back at him. We all reflexively ducked into cover as two more lightning bolts shot through the hole, and when we peeked around the corner again, the entire back half of the small room was filled with an opaque mist.
The next minute or so were spent calling Tink names. This was not the most productive use of our time, but none of us were dumb enough to try running into the mist and dislodging the Xenos Psyker. Doc was especially miffed, since his whole job had been to stop the rest of us from doing something like this, and Tink kept using the excuse for why this wasn't his fault. Using that as an excuse for why this wasn't his fault. Anyways, after another minute or so of juvenile arguing, it became apparent that the Elder's mist wasn't going to just dissipate on its own, and something proactive needed to be done. Unfortunately, our options were sort of limited. Tink proposed a flash and clear, but the rest of us had bad memories of the last time we tried that on a prepared psyker, and made it plan B. Nubby spoke next, and suggested going to get Fumbles, who was still making noise somewhere at the back of the evidence warehouse, since this would involve either splitting up or leaving the Eldar to mess with the containment unit, and because we weren't too optimistic about Fumbles' ability to go head-to-head with an Eldar psyker, this was plan C. Twitch began to suggest something truly harebrained, but it was cut off by Doc, who decided that he had about had enough, and it was time to take charge of the situation. In an odd repeat of last time we'd faced this sort of thing, Doc poked his head around the corner and attempted to engage the Xenos in diplomacy. To our immense surprise, instead of shooting our medic in the head with a lightning bolt, the Eldar stopped singing to listen to him.
Now, Doc wasn't a good smooth talker, but he did tend to sort of radiate a sort of awkward earnestness, which can really count for something in this sort of situation. The rest of us watched this all with varying degrees of incredulousness as he started off with an apology for Tink's behavior, then began explaining the overall situation and how the containment unit figured into it. The Eldar only responded with more silence, but since it wasn't a lightning bolt, Doc took it as a good sign and moved a little farther into the room as he continued talking. It was honestly a more impressive attempt at interspecies diplomacy we'd witnessed. I mean, sure, we'd seen the whole world shared between humans and the Tau, but the Slitheads tend to be sort of wishy-washy, and there had been a lot of trained diplomats involved in all that. This one was just a slightly naive soldier trying to convince a Xenos who probably had a massive grudge against the Inquisition, not to mention a racial affinity for Dickishish, to give peace a chance. It was powerful. Moving, really. We all honestly believe that given enough time, it would have totally have worked. The thing was, though, that while Doc was making his heartfelt plea, Tink was playing around with his drone controller and managed to get control of Spot's recon sensors, as well as one of the mundane psi suppressors. And we were sort of on a tight schedule with that demon throw doing Emperor knew what above us, and Fumble still needing a rescue, and you know, better safe than sorry, right? The Eldar had a second to be very surprised when her cloud of mist fizzled into nothing, and a barrage of plasma pulse rounds knocked her off the containment unit. Doc was not happy, even though we pointed out that our shots had missed anything immediately fatal, so if he really wanted, he could patch the Xenos up and give her the whole friendship speech again.
With that last obstacle out of his way, Tink ran over to the containment unit to see what the Eldar had done to it and figure out if the fancy Wraithbone suppressor was salvageable. While he got to work, Doc grumpily dragged the bleeding Xenos into a position where he could simultaneously treat her and keep an eye on the entrance. Nubby and Twitch loitered for a few seconds to see if they were needed for anything until an especially loud shout for help from Fumbles reminded them that they had something better to do. Nubby and Twitch's trip around the edge of the big room was relatively uneventful. It sort of seemed like everything that was capable of movement had either fled the room or run off to join the big melee, which was now reaching some sort of climax. The two troopers ignored the massive clusterfuck, pausing to let the occasional running gunfight go past or dodge a falling stack of boxes. The only real excitement was when a cargo servitor holding an obese man crashed across their path and then began bashing its captive against one of the stacks with an unwanted cat. The fat man was probably a psyker, because as he screamed for help, reality went a bit non-Euclidean and the floor started growing faces. But that might have had more to do with the large box labeled extra heretical that he was being bashed against. Either way, the two troopers ignored the altercation and walked through the patch of warped reality with the ease of people who'd seen worse phenomena on trips to the ship's mess hall. Aside from those little inconveniences, finding Fumbles really wasn't that hard. It was just a matter of heading in the general direction of all the psychic shouting and then homing in on the sense of bowel-loosening fear emanating from the little psyker. So before long, Twitch and Nubby reached the corner of the room where Fumbles was hiding and discovered what had him so worked up. They then very carefully stepped backwards to cover to observe the situation.
The scene was a weird one. Fumbles, or some other scrawny little psyker that periodically flickered in and out of visibility and radiated fear, had been chased up a large pile of boxes by a mob of small green figures that looked vaguely like Nubby. The Gretchens were taking turns climbing up the pile and then fleeing back down as Fumbles' aura of terror overwhelmed them. But that sort of behavior wasn't anything too unusual given their racial affinity for cowardice. It was their boss that was the weird part. You know those really secure prisoner transport things? Like, with all the straps holding someone to a gurney along with a face mask and some padlocks. Dial that up to 11, replacing the gurney with a hand truck being pushed by three Gretchens standing on top of each other's shoulders, and replace the prisoner with a raving orc weird boy, surrounded by an aura of crackling green light. And when I say raving, I mean it. The weird boy could speak Gothic, seemed to be using his mouth to compensate for being unable to move anything else, and from the sound of it was, even by orc standards, completely batshit insane. It was hard to keep track of everything he was saying, but in the minute or so Twitch and Nubby were listening, the primary theme seemed to have be that he wanted Fumbles' head. Literally. Like, you know, attached to his shoulder with stitches and stuff. He even had a Gretchen with a surgical mask standing by. From what we could tell, his motivation was for this was had something to do with the two heads being bigger than one, and it being the secret to the Brainy Ilmage power. So yeah, totally nuts and very frustrated with Fumbles, who kept doing rude things like refusing to come down and to be decapitated or claiming that he was only a figment of the orc's imagination.
I will also note that they have fan art of the captured orc in the Hannibal Lecter getup. Now, as amusing as it would have been to stand there and keep watching the orc argue with Fumbles, it just wasn't in the card. Shortly after Twitch and Nubby arrived, the weird boy ran out of patience and announced that Fumbles had till the count of four to come down or I'm a squig ya. Up to this point, Twitch had just been muttering to himself about how he'd known it all along, and Nubby had mostly been trying to figure out if the box was hiding behind, marked probably not heretical, had anything tactically useful or valuable inside of it. It didn't. But this new time limit kicked them into gear. Both troopers raised their weapons to get ready to shoot the weird boy as soon as it finished counting and began drawing its notoriously unstable powers. Over the next 20 seconds, the orc, with the help of the Gretchen Horde, managed to count up to 2, then skipped to 5, then got confused at 8, went back down to 6 for another try, and finally decided to skip ahead to 13. Nubby and Twitch loaded their weapons again. Since there was apparently enough time to do something more clever than spraying and praying, Twitch brought out the mechanical action mind that was his last remaining explosive. For his part, Nubby began waving at Fumbles while concentrating on the thought of turning Twitch invisible while he planted the mine on the still-counting weird boy. Fumbles noticed the waving and caught on pretty quickly. The little psyker faded back into visibility, screwed up his face in concentration, and Twitch faded out. The demolition trooper moved fast, which is why he was only 5 meters from the weird boy when a violent burst of energy from the warp smashed into Fumbles' mind, sending him reeling. Twitch swore as his invisibility fizzled, hucked the mine towards the weird boy like a frisbee, and sprinted back towards Nubby as the little trooper opened fire on full auto.
Several things happened at once. Twitch's mind bounced off the thick metal band restraining the weird boy's head, sailed off in a random direction, was snatched out of the air by an overenthusiastic Gretchen, and promptly exploded. The force of the blast knocked the weird boy's dolly over backwards, taking the orc out of Nubby's line of fire and crushing the 3 Gretchens that had been pushing it. It's so fucking funny. The Gretchen grabs him like,
he's like, yippee!
Nubby adjusted his aim, but as he did so, the orc psyker bellowed something. Somewhere in the pack of Gretchens, one of them exploded in a shower of green sparks and a small cloud of acrid smoke. The rest surged forward with a high pitch, intercepting Nubby's fire and closing the gap surprisingly fast. Nubby held the trigger down until Twitch reached him. Then they both did some quick math and decided that 30 and an enraged weird boy to 2 odds weren't in their favor and cheesed it the fuck out of there. Now, despite what it looked like, this was not a cowardly retreat. It's actually a carefully planned tactical maneuver to distract the enemy from the true objective. Or at least it turned out that way in any case. Veteran retreaters that they were, Twitch and Nubby easily outpaced the Xenos and broke contact long enough to come up with a plan and split up. Twitch stayed in the path they'd been following. He found a nice firing position and started shooting Gretchens as they came around a handy corner, racking up 7 kills without any real trouble. Then the weird boy and the Gretchens pushing him shot around the corner, tilting up on one wheel and bellowing, "It's squiggin' time!" as he barreled at them.
See, it says as he came, and I know that it's not jizz. But yelling "it's squigging time" as you come is a really funny mental image. There was a brief struggle of wills, and at the end of which Twitch's mind was fairly certain he was actually a hyper carnivorous ball of teeth. Luckily, Twitch's body was harder to convince and shook off the weird boy's attack with no more than a few lacerations and a pulled muscle or 2. The demolition trooper blinked and realized how close to a fate worse than death he'd just come and decided it was time to get running again. The small orcish horde let out another wah and followed him. Hold on.
All good.
Okay, I was just making sure I read that right. A few dozen meters away, Nubby sidled out through a gap between the 2 stacks of boxes and found himself back to where the chase had started. A quick scan of the area revealed that a few Gretchen had stayed behind and were in the process of carrying the still-stunned Fumbles down from his perch on the pile. Nubby, not being one to do the hard work himself when others seemed willing to do it for him, pulled out a low stick and casually waited for the Gretchen to finish before gunning them down. Then, his heroic rescue completed, the little trooper wandered over to Fumbles and checked the psyker's status by prodding him in the ribs a few times. When this elicited nothing more than a faint groan, Nubby, muttering to himself about how he could do everything, grabbed one of Fumbles' legs and began dragging the psyker back toward the Demon Thrope crater. Meanwhile, Twitch was barely staying ahead of the weird boy, who just started emitting some sort of brilliant crackling energy that boosted the speed of it and his minions. It was really something out of the paranoid trooper's nightmares. Gretchen kept popping up out of side alleys before he could turn into them, and every time he hit a straightaway, the weird boy's hand truck gained a little ground. The fear just lent Twitch even more speed, though, and anyway, he had a plan. Mind you, It lacked a large amount of explosive that would make it a good plan in his eyes, but it was still a plan. How are we feeling? We do one more or two more?
We can do one more, and then we're actually exactly on the dot halfway through. But we could also stop right there, be an even round. So I'm fine with that. This is a good one.
We can call it there, I think. Down with that, Serge?
Yeah.
We can finish
this is very fun.
You think Doc's going to get another girlfriend? One of the Xenos variety?
Probably. I feel like he'll never get a girlfriend. That's my running thing.
He has
thing.
One. What are you talking about? Sister of Battle?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the she alive still?
Yeah.
Yeah, I assume. She's fine. Last we saw her.
Doc and the this,
how can,
this
how can
is
you
Doc's
forget Doc's
anime.
Infamous fucking?
Do you have a name? I don't remember.
I can't remember her name either. I think they just always refer to her as Doc's sister of battle girlfriend.
No, she's not a sister of battle. She's an adept, right?
Is she an adept? I thought she was a sister of battle. I could be wrong.
She is an adept. She's not a she's another medic, I believe. She was like a nurse or something.
Okay. I could be wrong. But anyways, I'm really having a lot of fun with this again. I'm glad that we're getting back to it, and I'm glad this one is shorter. It's much more manageably sized.
Yeah.
But anywho, anything we should announce? Anything we should say before we cut out for now?
We're killing Sergio.
Okay. Sergio.
Throwing me down the stairs, too.
It's squigging time!